Satara Sadashi Shimadas Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Jai. ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Natakoti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakura Ki Jai. Prem Shikho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Dvaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gaur Gopinath Shaiva Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai. Maturi Dham Ki Jai. Navadri Mayapur Dham Ki Jai. Jamilapuri Dham Ki Jai. Gangamai Jamuna Devi Ki Jai. Bhakti Devi Ki Jai. Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai. Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Garanga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada Nama Om Vishnu Padaya. Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Sri Mate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Yiti Namane. Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pacharani Vasesa Sinivani Paskatyadi Satarani. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yutam Padkamalam Sri Guru and Vaishnavanshtra. Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Bhaganatam Vidamasam Sajivam. Sadvaitam Sadvaritam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Shakrapitam Sham Vantrakalpa Chubhishtam Devasam Devatam Tichanam Bhavanevya Vaishnavam Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. It's April 22nd, 2017 in New Vrindavan, West Virginia. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 12, Chapter 11, Texts 1 through 5. So first I'm going to read the summary of the chapter. In the context of worship, this chapter describes the Mahapurusha and the various expansions of the sun in each month. Sri Sutta first tells Shonaka Rishi about the material objects through which one can understand the major limbs, the secondary limbs, the weapons, and the garments of Lord Sri Hari. Then he outlines the process of practical service by which a mortal soul can attain immortality. When Shonaka shows further interest in learning about the expansion of Lord Hari in the form of the sun god, Sutta replies that Lord Sri Hari, the indwelling controller of the universe and its original creator, manifests himself in the form of the demigod of the sun. Sages describe the sun god in many features according to his different material designations. To sustain the world, the personality of Godhead manifests his potency of time as the sun and travels throughout the 12 months, beginning with Chaitra, along with 12 sets of personal associates. One remembers the opulences of the personality of Godhead Sri Hari in his form as the sun, will become free of his sinful reactions. Text 1. Sri Shanaka Uvacha. Ate mamartam prichamo. Bhavantam bhavitamam. Samasta tantra radante. Bhavan bhagavata tat favit. Sri Sanaka Uvacha. Sri Sanaka said, Ata, now, imam, this, artam, matter, prichamaha, we are inquiring about, bhavantam, from you, bahuvittamam, the possessor of the broadest knowledge, samasta, of all, Tantra, the scriptures prescribing practical methods of worship. Radha Ante, in the definitive conclusions. Bhavan, you, Bhagavata, a great devotee of the Supreme Lord. Tatvavit, the knower of the essential facts. Translation. Sri Sanaka said, O Sutta, you are the best of learned men and a great devotee of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, we now inquire from you about the definitive conclusion of all Tantra scriptures. Text 2. All good fortune to you. Please explain to us, who are very eager to learn, The process of Kriya Yoga, practiced through regulated worship of the Transcendental Lord, the husband of the Goddess of Fortune. Please also explain how the Lord's devotees conceive of his limbs, associates, weapons, and ornaments in terms of particular material representations. By expertly worshipping the Supreme Lord, a mortal can attain immortality. Text 4. Sutta Goswami said, offering obeisances to my spiritual masters, I shall repeat to you the description of the opulences of Lord Vishnu given in the Vedas and Tantras by great authorities beginning from lotus-born Brahma. Text 5. The universal form Virat of the personality of Godhead includes the nine basic elements of creation, starting with the unmanifest nature and their subsequent transformations. Once this universal form is instilled with consciousness, the three planetary systems become visible within it. Purport, the nine basic elements of creation are Prakriti, Sutra, Mahatattva, false ego, and the five subtle perceptions. The transformations are the 11 senses and the five gross material elements. So the purpose in these inquiries of Vaishanika is he wants to meditate. He wants to fix his mind. He's very eager to hear about the Lord upon whom he can fix his mind. So, this subject matter of the mind, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, is extremely important. Why does he say it's important? Anybody know?
It is difficult to control.
Very difficult to control. Arjuna also said that. Chanchali Krishna. But why did Krishna say this? What we think about is so important. Yes.
Higher than the senses is the mind. So the mind is to be controlled in order to control the senses.
Okay, so in order to control our senses, we have to control our mind. The mind is the master, or should be. The master can be. Why else?
It can be the greatest friend or the greatest enemy.
So the mind can be a great friend or a great enemy. It doesn't tend to be neutral. Either it's a helper or a hinderer. Why else do we need to control the mind?
So we can become free from false ego.
So we can become free from false ego. That's interesting, because the false ego is considered more subtle than the mind. But what does Krishna say? For one who has controlled the mind, what is already reached?
Supersoul.
The super soul is already reached because such a person has attained
tranquility.
Yes, very nice. Why else is it important to control the mind? Yes. So we can transcend the modes, yes. As Krishna says, Mantra Yoga Vitarine Bhakti Yoga Nisayati Sagunam Samati Chaitam Brahma Vyai Kapate. If we're constantly engaged in bhakti, then immediately the modes are transcended. Why else do we want to control the mind? Anybody know Bhagavad Gita 8:6? This is one of the favorite verses of many Gurukul students, because they would chant this verse whenever anybody liked prasadam. So people would be taking prasadam and they go, yum! And then the kids would go, yum, yum, bhapis, parampa, bhapaja, jan, take away. So I was around kids for a long time. So Krishna is saying there that whatever we think about determines our destination. It's the subtle body. And this is also nicely explained in Bhagavad Gita 13th chapter, that it's the subtle body that carries the soul from one place to another. It's really the content of our thoughts that determine our experiences entirely. It determines what kind of body we get. Everything is coming from the mind. Yes? And therefore, Bhakti Yoga begins with what? Second chapter, Nectar Devotion. What's the beginning of sadhana bhakti? When one is doing what with the mind? Good thing to know, since I think most of us here are performing sadhana bhakti. What does it begin with?
Sadhana
To do what with the mind?
Chanting.
Well, but specifically with the mind.
Discipline.
Thinking
of?
Krishna.
Sadhana bhakti begins with thinking of Krishna. Sadhana bhakti does not begin just with what we're doing with our gross body. If we're just engaging our gross body in activities of bhakti, we're not actually in sadhana bhakti. Now we're in Krishna karmani, we're working for Krishna. Bhagavad Gita 12:10. Krishna says, you always think of me with love. If you can't do that, then do abhyas yoga. Abhyas means practice or repetition. The same idea as sadhana. And why do sadhana? To develop the desire to attain me. And he says, if you can't do that, then do Krishna karmani, do some work for me. And eventually, if you're working for someone, you may start thinking about them. That's the idea, they say. In the modern psychology, if you want someone to like you, get them to do something for you, get them to serve you. Often we think, if I want to get someone to like me, I'll do something for them. But that doesn't always work. In fact, that can just make them irritated. I was with someone some weeks ago who needed help with something. I said, why don't you ask someone? And she said, well, if I ask them, then I'll be obligated to them. I'll be in their debt. I'll owe them a favor. So often when we do a favor for someone, they just feel irritated. Oh, now I owe them a favor. But if you get someone to serve you, they're thinking, well, if I served you, I must like you. And it's an interesting phenomena. So Krishna is saying, if we work for him, eventually we'll start thinking of him. And it's this practicing, thinking of him, that is called sadhana bhakti. And the external behaviors of sadhana bhakti are meant to help our mind think of him. And of course, when does Rupa Goswami say we should think of Krishna? Always. My godmother Govinda Prabhupada, long before there was a Vedabase, was researching through all of Prabhupada's books and lectures to find which instruction Srila Prabhupada repeated the most often. And he compiled the list, which I have not memorized. And he also found out what adverb Srila Prabhupada used most often in relation to chanting. And what would that adverb be? Sorry if you've hated grammar in school and you have no remembrance whatsoever about what an adverb is.
Constantly
or always, yes. Now, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, in commenting in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu upon this always think of Krishna, says at least regularly. For the sadhaka, it means at least regularly. So for those who are already in love with Krishna, they naturally think about him always, but for those who are practicing abhyas yoga, like if you're practicing learning the piano, if you're practicing learning a new language, anything you're practicing, you set aside some regular time to practice it. Isn't that correct? Yes? When I was a child, I suffered with piano lessons. Definitely only suffered with them, unfortunately. But it meant that I had a regular piano teacher come, and then I would practice on the piano. And the idea was it was supposed to become what? Which it never did for me. I didn't stick with it long enough. But what was it supposed to become? Supposed to become second nature. It was supposed to become automatic. Now, the reason the thinking of Krishna can become automatic is because it is our natural position. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu nicely explains this to Sanatana Goswami, that our natural position eternally is to be in love with Krishna, and that this is awakened through the process of hearing and chanting about Krishna. But it's already there. And the examples given in the Nectar of Devotion, just like a child has the natural ability to walk. When a baby is first born, and by first born I really mean in the first 10 or 20 seconds after birth, the attendant, the midwife, the doctor, does what's called an Apgar score. And they look at various, it's 10 different elements of the baby, baby's color, baby's breathing. And one of the things they do is they pick up this newly born child and hold the child so that its feet are touching a hard surface. And they see if the baby will put one foot in front of another, if the walking instinct is established. So that's there in the newborn baby. I mean, humans are not like giraffes who literally stand up and run right after birth. It takes us a couple of years. But the natural ability to walk is there, and by practicing walking, it comes out. Like we have a natural ability to speak, by practicing speaking, it comes out. So this practice, what we're practicing, is meditating on Krishna. And I was thinking this morning about Astanga Yoga and the different levels of Astanga Yoga, very much in relationship to what we're trying to write about. In relationship to what was coined by a professor, Csikszentmihalyi, of flow, where he talked about if you're absorbed in something, he calls it flow, you lose sense of your ego, you lose sense of time, your action, the thing itself and your intention become one. And I was reading some comparisons of this phenomena that can happen in any kind of work, corresponded to various states of meditation. And I was thinking about the difference between dharana and dhyana. There's dharana, dhyana, and samadhi. Dharana means what? What does dhara mean? Giridhara vari. Giridhari. Hold. To hold. Dharana means to hold. That you're holding the mind. And some teachers of meditation say you should hold the mind like you would hold a little bird. I don't hold birds very much, so I think a bit about holding flowers. You know, picking the flowers, going out, picking some lilacs, picking some daffodils to take for the worship. So when you're holding the flowers, you don't want to drop them, right? But you also don't want to smash them. So it's a very gentle kind of holding. So dharana is you're holding your mind, but you're holding it very gently. And then after holding, eventually it becomes dhyana. Dhyana means when it just flows. When the mind naturally flows to its object. Srila Prabhupada compares this to a car that won't run. And he says, if a car won't run, maybe you get out and push it. But the idea of pushing it, hopefully you don't have to push it all the way from its breakdown point to the gas station. You push it with the idea that it starts getting its own power again. So Prabhupada was making this comparison. This dharana, this holding of the mind, is meant to situate the mind so that it just flows. And once it flows, then one enters into samadhi. Samadhi. In samadhi, as soon as the mind is flowing to the lotus feet of the Lord, then one gets this deep, like we have dhimahi, one gets this understanding, one gets this realization, one gets an epiphany, one comes to a higher state of knowledge, where sama, one sees, right? Vidya vinaya sampane brahmanika vihastani sunichaiva supaketa pandita sama darshinaha. As Krishna says, when the mind is controlled, the super souls are already reached, for one has attained tranquility. Samadhi is a state of peace, of joy, and of seeing the Lord everywhere in everything in one's own heart, and seeing everyone as a spiritual being, and seeing everyone as related to Krishna. So this is the process of yoga, whether it's done through meditative yoga, whether it's done through philosophy yoga, whether it's done through action yoga, or whether it's done through devotion yoga. And every kind of religion and every kind of spiritual process, bona fide religion, bona fide spiritual process, can be categorized in one of those four, or some mixture of them. So every religion is either trying to attain God and self-realization through contemplation and meditation, or through philosophy, or through action, or through devotion, or as we say, some mix. And as I was hearing Prabhupada say this morning, that the other three are included in devotion. In devotion, we meditate. In devotion, we study philosophy. In devotion, we do action. But the essence is this always thinking of the Lord, this dharana, this holding the mind. And one shouldn't have to, again, hold the mind forever. At a certain point of holding the mind, it becomes the friend. The mind's natural state is in sattva-gun. And once one comes to samadhi, one has actually transcended the mind. The spiritual becomes revealed. For one who has conquered the mind, the super soul is already reached. As soon as the mind comes to the mode of goodness, then spirituality is revealed. As Krishna says, happiness in the mode of goodness awakens one to its poison beginning, nectar at the end, and awakens one to self-realization. So as soon as the mind is properly situated, one realizes God and one realizes the self. So how are we going to meditate on God? How are we going to fix our mind on God? If we don't actually realize God and we don't actually realize the self until the mind is so controlled that it is just flowing in self-control without any effort on our part anymore, when we've passed the point of effort, when we've come to automaticity, if it's only at that stage that we really see God face to face and speak with Him and hear Him and live in His presence all the time, then how do we start the process? How do we start meditating on God in a directive, intentional way, as a practice, as a sadhana, as a abhyas yoga? If you haven't yet realized it, what are you going to do? So it's very nicely explained in the commentary to Nectar of Instruction, text 8, the different stages in meditation in our devotional yoga, our bhakti yoga, which is a little different from the stages in Ashtanga yoga. And our first stage of meditation is to hear. To hear. And therefore you find in every religious system, every genuine religious system in the world, there's some holy books and there are some teachers who are telling us about the transcendence. So we see here in text 4 that when Sutta Goswami is going to give his explanation, he first says, I am referring to my teachers. And I'm not just referring to my teachers in a theoretical, intellectual way. We say the qualification to be a spiritual teacher, a guru, is Srotriyam Brahmanishtam. Srotriyam means to have heard. Srotriyam means the ear. But not just that you hear from your teachers like we hear materially. Materially, we hear from our teacher, okay, two parallel lines never meet, and so I repeat that. You know, I hear that in Japan there's volcanoes, and because it's on the ring of fire, so there's a lot of systemic activity, and because there's systemic activity, there's a lot of hot ponds, and in the winter in Japan there's monkeys called snow monkeys that bathe in the hot ponds. I thought about this the other day because I was in Idaho and they took me to some hot ponds that were really hot puddles. We drove 2 hours through the mountains in the snow. Here's the hot ponds! And they were little tiny puddles. I was thinking about the snow monkeys in Japan, but I've never been to Japan. So, but I've heard that. I've heard that from some teacher. I've heard that from some book. But it's not exactly that kind of hearing. It's a different kind of hearing. It's a hearing that's the start of meditation. And it's not simply information going from one intellect to another. It is realization and understanding going from soul to soul. It is revealed by the mercy of our teachers, not simply by intellect. One can study the scriptures with intellect. One can explain them with intellect for many, many lives. Bahunam janmanam mante gyanamanam upadite. One can go on and on and on. This is compared by Srila Prabhupada's spiritual master, Bhaktisiddhanta, to licking the outside of a jar of honey. Now, you will never taste the honey like that. Or Bhaktisiddhanta's father, Srila Bhakti Vinod, explains this in his commentary on the Srimanashikta of Raghunath Das Goswami, as this is like having a very beautiful spoon that holds food but doesn't taste it. It may be a very attractive spoon, and it's touching food, but it doesn't have any taste experience of the food. So if we simply try to hear with our intellect, we will not get the beginning of meditation. It will not happen if we hear just officially. There's something transcendent, something we could say mystical, that has to go on. And that is, we have to get the grace or the blessings of saintly persons. Now, that doesn't mean that our spiritual advancement is just some kind of magical thing. You know, sometimes people think like that too. They think, I'm going to go to a saint and they're just going to give me some mercy, you know, I'm going to get some special water or some special dust. And we see this again in every tradition. That people, I'm just going to go to this place and take a bath in this water, and I'm just going to, you know, contact this saint and poof. Because the reality is, when you are close to a saint, you can get some shadow or reflection of their ecstatic experience, at least temporarily. I mean, this is true even materially, isn't it? You can pick up on people's emotional state by being near them, isn't it? Yes? If you walk in a room where people have had an argument, even if they stop arguing the second they know that someone's walking in the room, you can feel it, can't you? Right? It's just like something's wrong here. And the same with positive states. What to speak of spirituality, if you're right near, physically right near, or touching, or contacting some substance from a self-realized person, you can experience some shadow or reflection of their spiritual state. And it's possible, by taking that shadow or reflection and cultivating it, to come to your own ecstasy. But it's not exactly that that's the standard process. The standard process is to hear with mercy both, not just intellectual and not just magical. To hear with submission, tadvidi pranipatena pariparshina sevaya upadekshantite yanam geninas tadvidarshi. Again, even materially, this is true. If you want to learn something from a teacher of anything, if that teacher likes you, if you have some relationship of love and trust with that teacher, you're far more likely to learn something. Isn't that a fact? The teacher is far more likely to spend his or her time with you and really, really give you the highest thing that the teacher has to give. And here we are very eager. We're very eager to learn. This eagerness to learn, this enthusiasm to learn, and this respect for the teacher. So this is where our meditation on God and our meditation on the self starts from. It starts from going to the right source, to people who already have realized God and the self, to be eager to hear from them, and to give them some respect, to give them some service, not to make it official and intellectual. Now, the way that we're advised to meditate on God here in this particular verse, especially text 3, is something that I find particularly fascinating. And it resolves the question, for any of you who are religious scholars, of immanence and transcendence. Immanence is the concept that God is totally separate from the world. He created the world, but God and goodness and spirituality, you know, is all the way over here, and the world is just evil and all the way over here. And people who think that reality is ultimately that God is immanent tend to think that the way to become spiritual is to be as far away from the world as possible. To be away from other people, not to have any things, not to interact with the world at all, just to go internal in contemplation and meditation. And this is a particular way of thinking, a world-negating philosophy, is how the sociologists would put it. And then there's those who see God as immanent. He's everywhere and in everything. You can find God everywhere. Now, the problem with just thinking that God is everywhere and it's in everything is then how do I have a personal relationship? If he doesn't have any existence separate, so I can kind of find him everywhere and in everything, but then how do I relate to just an everywhere and an everything? How do I just love the everywhere and the everything? How do I just meditate on the everywhere and the everything? And how is that different from anyone who's meditating on anything in the world in a materialistic sense? And in fact, we find that the people who think that God is immanent tend to just be materialists, but cover it with some spiritual talk. Oh, everything I'm doing is spiritual. It's all spiritual. But they're not actually experiencing spirituality. And those who think God is only transcendent tend to fail because it's very difficult. Right? Klesho dikatarastesham avyakta shaktachetasam avyakta higatirdukam dehavadbir avapyate. It's very, very difficult for us to have nothing to do with the world. To just go to a cave somewhere. When I was 16, I was with a youth group traveling in the Rocky Mountains in Canada in Jasper Banff National Park. And at one point we came to Lake Louise, one of the most beautiful places that I've ever been. It's a glacial lake. And we went out in boats, I think it was canoes, I think it was motorboats, rowboats or canoes. We went out in a boat to this little island in the middle of the lake, and it was incredibly peaceful, just amazingly. You couldn't swim in that water because it was just like 32.5 degrees because it was melted glaciers. So it was still crystal clear, pure. We could drink all the water there. That was a long time ago. I don't know if you still can. And the Rocky Mountains and the forest. It was just beautiful. And I was sitting there and I was doing meditation. And I thought I could stay here forever. And then I realized I really couldn't. That I had too many desires to stay there forever. And I wasn't going to be able to fulfill all my desires, that I wanted ultimately to go back to my home and see my family and, you know, travel. We were on a bike trip and we just had whatever we could carry in little bags on the back of the bike. So I just had like two pairs of blue jeans and two shirts. And I thought, you know, I want to wear some more clothes. And I wouldn't be happy here. I want to be with more people. I want to be with more clothes. I want to be with more something. I want to listen to music. I couldn't just stay on this island. So if you think that God is transcendent only, most people fail. They try to renounce the world and then they go back to the world. So here is, in this verse, a little hint of the philosophy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Achintabhadvaita Tattva, that God is simultaneously one with everything and separate from everything. And how this is realized here I find just absolutely astonishing, and it would be lovely to talk about this one verse for a week or two or a month or two or a year or two. How one should meditate on the Lord as the husband of the goddess of fortune, his devotees, his limbs, his associates, his weapons, and his ornaments, in terms of how he's understood in this world. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, in terms of the material vibhutis. The vibhutis are the opulences, especially as mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, which chapters?
Ten.
And where else? Three more.
Nine.
And?
Seven.
And?
11.
No. 15. So 7, 9, 10, and 15. So there Krishna mentions how you can understand him in the world. Can anybody remember any of those from any one of those chapters?
Of bodies of water, I am the ocean.
Of bodies of water, I am the ocean. Okay. Another one.
I'm the light of the sun and moon.
I'm the light of the sun and moon. Yes. Yes. More.
Taste of water.
These are really important. Why are these so important? Because what are we interacting with? We're interacting with the things of this world. If we just try to think of Krishna blowing his flute, taking care of the cows, and he takes care of goats and buffaloes too. And the river Yamuna and the Govardhan Hill. If we just try to think of Krishna in the spiritual world, it's very difficult because our mind keeps getting pulled to the things we have to do in this world. Have you noticed that? Has everybody noticed that? You try to think of Krishna in the spiritual world and you start thinking, oh, do I have enough laundry detergent? Do I have to go to the store? Is there enough gas in my car? I have a letter I have to write. Did I write that or not? I better check and see if I wrote that. Isn't that what happens? Right? Oh, there's an email in my, from somebody and it didn't look like it was a very happy email. I got to answer it later. We think about this. We think about what's going on in the world. My kid is sick. What am I going to do? I hope he's okay. I hope I don't have to go to the doctor. And our mind is just drawn. Chinta is an interesting word. Chinta can mean mind, consciousness, and it can also mean
worry
and anxiety. Or we're looking forward to something. Oh, pretty soon there's going to be this festival coming up and I'm going to go here. And my best friend's daughter's getting married. And we tend to go to that. And then we say, okay, let me bring my mind back to Krishna. Krishna's got his yellow garment and he plays a flute. And I'm worried about that email I have to answer. Hey, doesn't this happen? Yes? So how are we going to have this dharana? How are we going to hold the mind? How are we going to fix the mind? We can do it through these vibhutis. Because everything our mind goes to can remind us of Krishna. Everything in this world. Everything. Krishna not only says he's the light of the sun and the moon, he says he's the light, because there's not very much light from the sun directly in this room, is there? Do we have skylights in the center part?
We have.
We do. So we have a little sunlight directly.
But they're covered.
Hmm?
They're covered.
They're covered. Okay, but even these light bulbs, they're ultimately getting their light from the sun, right? Because it's coming from electricity. Electricity is coming from burning fossil fuels, which were created by sunlight. It's plants originally, which got their energy from the sun. Or from the flow of water, if it's hydroelectric power, which comes from the sun evaporating the water. Or turbo power is also caused by the sun having the movements of the air. So ultimately, our light is coming from the sun. But Krishna also says, I am the light in all luminous objects. He says, I am the heat and fire. I am the ability in a human being. I am intelligence. All of these things. I am the life air coming and going. Digestion and food stuff. So everything we're doing throughout the day, we're relating with one of these vibhutis, or more, or 10, or 20. We're relating with some opulence of the Lord in this world. And these opulences of the Lord in this world can spark a remembrance of God, not only as the creator and the maintainer and the annihilator of this world, which is his secondary feature, and which is the only feature most religions contemplate at all. God is the creator, God is the maintainer, God is the father. But also they can spark our remembrance of God in his own abode, which is, of course, one of the, I wouldn't say unique, I'd say very rare, that it's very rare that any tradition on the earth in 2017 is teaching about what God does at home. What is his home? You know, people say we want to go to heaven. And I remember asking some people, what will you do there? And they said, well, they were very, we will do the same things we're doing here. And I said, well, will you watch television? So there's very little information about the Lord and his own abode. But even the vibhutis here can immediately spark remembrance of the Lord, not only in relation to this world, but in relation to his own abode, to his associates. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, with the devotees for this verse, gives the example of Garuda. Here there's so many birds. Yes? So many birds here on the property. So in the universal form, the birds represent the artistic sense of the Lord. I think we can especially see that with the birds here who are New Vrindavan. We have particularly attractive and beautiful birds that can remind us of the Lord's artistic sense. And we can then meditate on his artistic sense in the world in general, and his artistic sense in how he puts on his dhoti, and how he ties his turban, and how he decorates Srimati Radharani and so forth. And we become linked, then, between what we're thinking of here and our ultimate transcendence. And in this way, bhakti yoga process is eminently practical, especially for this particular time in human history. So we can say that bhakti yoga is always the easiest and most direct means of God realization, even in former ages. But at this particular time, it is certainly the simplest. To engage in meditative yoga, to engage in philosophical yoga, or just action yoga, without bhakti, is going to be very, very difficult for most people. But bhakti is in fact extremely easy. Of course we have to do it. We have to do it. If we're simply licking the outside of the jar of honey or simply being an ornamental spoon holding the food, it's going to be a very, very, very long time. I'm not quite sure how long it will take us to get through a glass jar by licking it. Water does eventually wear things down, so I suppose if we just keep licking that glass jar after a while, we'll wear down the glass and we'll get some honey, but that will be a very long, drawn-out process. So our essence of this bhakti yoga process is to think of Krishna and to ultimately to be able to hold the mind dharma in that thought of Krishna throughout everything we're doing. So we have our concentrated times of the day, especially our the morning, what we call the morning program, or we call our sadhana time. So we have some concentrated times of the day where what we're supposed to be doing is not allowing our mind to go to any of the things of this world at all. We're not supposed to be thinking then of the email we have to answer and the laundry detergent we have to buy and our best friend's wedding or any of those things. We're supposed to be during that time thinking of Krishna in his own abode, and with our worship of the deities, with our japa, with our gayatri, with our hearing of the Bhagavatam. We're supposed to be having that time, or at least for that time every day. We have the set time every day. And that time every day is supposed to give us the strength and the ability, then as we do various things throughout the day, that we're able to keep that dharana of the mind, because we're connecting the vibhutis of the world, the opulences of the world, with the Lord, both in this world and in the transcendent world. And if we keep that practice, abhyasa yoga, repeating, 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 wherever the mind wanders due to its flickering and unsteady nature, one should always bring it back. If we continue to do that, then eventually the dhyana will come. That it will flow. It will be an automatic flow. It will be an effortless flow. And when it is an effortless flow, then the spiritual reality manifests to us. It comes, it's already there, but we become aware of it. We become conscious of it. We become, frankly, Krishna conscious. We become aware of how Krishna is everywhere and yet transcendent. We become aware of our own self, our own nature. Now, of course, this is not a black and white kind of thing. It's not an either-or kind of thing. But as we go through the process of bhakti, whenever we're able to fix the mind for any period of time, it will start to flow automatically to the lotus feet of the Lord, and then we get some of what we call a realization or an epiphany. We have this like little break in the clouds, and the sun shines through. But we want to come to the point where we live in that place, where we are always in that place of Krishna consciousness. And it starts, again, going back to text 4, it starts again by hearing, and particularly by hearing from saintly persons, and not just hearing from them in an intellectual way, and not trying to hear from them in just some sort of magical way, but to hear from them with great respect and great love and service. So questions, comments, corrections, additions, subtractions. No questions? Yes, please.
So you brought up this problem of the people who think of the Lord in the imminence as sort of, they're actually giving some lip service to God, and actually they're basically keeping their mind on material things.
So, but that's the tendency.
Right. And then, on the other hand, we're wanting to see the Lord in his vibhutis. So how do we avoid, like, rationalizing some kind of material tendency in that way?
Because we also understand that God is transcendent. And as a transcendent, separately existing person, he has particular ways that he would like us to think of him, and particular ways he'd like us to use his energy. It's just like we're both guests here. We're staying in a cabin that belongs to New Vrindavan. So we naturally want to understand how do the owners of the place want us to treat it.
Yeah.
So it's like we see everything as the vibhuti, the energy, the opulence, that God is everywhere in his vibhutis, but he's also a transcendent person who has particular ways that he wants his energy to be used. Yes, that is the problem. If you only think God is immanent, you will tend to rationalize your own selfishness.
So we have to get rid of the humbug that I
Yes. You know, that famous Beatles song, I, Me, Me, Mine. But our substitute for that is, I am Krishna's and Krishna is mine. Any other questions?
Krishna, thank you, Rila. I don't have a specific question, but I wanted to appreciate your awakening classes. So it's stimulating.
Typical Vrajalila appreciation here.
That's my only qualification, to appreciate the book.
That's wonderful qualification.
However, I was really appreciating this last part of what you said about this abhyas yoga, just to repeat, just keep repeating. And I guess because we're together with the japa retreat, and we should see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, just by chanting the whole name, just having that process, just engaging in that process, then that will give us the realization of what you're speaking about in this class.
Yes. It's important, though, there's a nice quote, I don't have it memorized, so I'm not getting exactly the words. Her Prabhupada said, if we're chanting and our mind is just dwelling on nonsense, then he says, this is useless. Then he has a long pause, he said, or it will take much time. And then he says, why are you reading Krishna book? He said, you're reading Krishna book, so as soon as you're chanting, you'll remember that Krishna's fighting with some demon and the cowherd boys are encouraging him with claps. He said, or Krishna's talks in the Bhagavad Gita. He said, if you're not doing that, then it is, there's some deficiency or some inattention in your spiritual life. So what we should be repeating by practice is not just some mechanical chanting. Because then we don't understand bhakti yoga at all. You know, Ashtanga yoga or Dhyan yoga also needs some element of bhakti, but it's more a mechanical process. Gyan and Dhyan particularly are quite mechanical, and I'd say Karma Yoga has some element of mechanics in it. You know, the Dhyan Yoga is, if I just sit in a certain way and I breathe in a certain way, then my mind tends to become quiet, which it's a fact, it does. And then I'm going to control my mind mechanically. And with Gyan, if you really think about and discuss the nature of the world, you will become detached. You have to. It will happen mechanically. You can't talk about the nature of the world as it is without becoming detached. And then you try to hold on to that. But both of those, because they're mechanical, they're not dealing with the ultimate nature of the self. So in bhakti, if we take up the practices of bhakti as if they're something mechanical, then we're not really doing bhakti. We're really doing another process. And we're probably not doing the other process terribly well. It's like we're using the principles of bhakti to try to do something that's not bhakti. And so we'd end up doing neither very well. Does that make sense? We don't do bhakti very well, and we're not doing dhyan yoga very well. and our progress becomes very slow. So what we're trying to repeat in our practice is a development of a relationship of love with the Lord. That's what we're trying to repeat in our practice. It's a certain behavior. And a very, very crude example that I can give you is I had a student once who was very annoying. He was really, really annoying. He would come up to my desk over and over again, every single class, asking me questions that he could think of the answer to himself if he just took about 5 seconds. Go back, think about it, please. Then come back and ask me. And my mood towards him was basically one of annoyance. By the way, his parents also found him very annoying. The main interaction I had with his parents was they would complain to me about him. Especially his mother complained to me about him a lot. The other kids didn't like him very much either. Basically, nobody really liked him. And one day I realized that I didn't like him. And I remember one of my mentors early on when I was first becoming a teacher said, never teach a child you don't like. And once I realized I didn't like this child, I was in a quandary. If I could never teach a child I didn't like and I didn't like him, what was I going to do? Was I going to go to the parents and say, I'm sorry, you have to take your kid out of my class because I don't like him? You know, I couldn't do that. I didn't have that option, and I didn't know what to do. And I thought, well, maybe I can pretend to like him. Maybe I can practice liking him. So having had some training in theater, I knew exactly what I did. Oh! You know, every time he came to my desk, which was a lot, so I had a lot of opportunities for practice, I'd, oh, I'm so glad you're here. And internally, I was kind of, but I was practicing. Well, something very interesting happened. And that is, after a few days, first of all, I started actually liking this child more. What also started happening was his annoying behavior decreased. It never went away entirely, and he never became one of my favorite students. But I started to genuinely like this person by pretending to like him. And I think the reason for that is that every person is a part of God and is ultimately likable. The other thing that happened was the other students started liking him more also. The attitude toward the... So his attitude changed, his behavior changed. Again, not 100%. The attitude of the other children towards him changed. My attitude towards him changed. So in this case, Krishna is not actually annoying. He's wonderful. God is wonderful. He is perfect. He is loving. But I have found so many reasons to not want to be with him. And if you think about the many ways that God is characterized, even by religious people, I frankly would not want to hang out with the way God is mostly described. Angry, jealous, vindictive, punishing, you know. You don't believe in me? You will feel pain forever. Whoa, you know, I don't want to be friends with somebody like that. Sounds like a poison ivy plant. You know, it's like, no, thank you. And many, many times people will just, and I've even heard people in our own society, describe God in ways that it's like, you want to be with someone? They'll say, if you're really surrendered to Krishna, you'll do things that you hate. So God is demanding that you're miserable and you want to be with this person eternally? So I see that allows us to make a profession and to profess, to say, I want to surrender, but actually I don't really want to surrender to God because he's not really very nice. So the fact is that he is very nice and there's no fault on his part whatsoever. So it's a little different than me with the student who actually had some fault. But if I pretend, if I practice thinking of God, and I practice being nice to God, and I practice hanging out with him, what will happen is I'll realize he's very nice. Wow, he's really nice. And the only person who was at fault here was me by thinking he was nasty. Or by thinking he didn't love me, or he didn't care about me, or he didn't, you know, whatever. So that's what we're practicing. We're not really practicing a ritual. I will say these prayers while I move this thing in this number of circles, and I will say, I will light this candle at exactly this time, and I will say these words at exactly this time, and I will bow down at this time, and if I do these mechanical things, one day I'm going to realize God. That's not what we're practicing. We're practicing thinking about Krishna. We're practicing meditating on how wonderful he is, even if there's a part of us that goes, but he's not really. And meditating like that, and eventually we come, wow, he really is. And he's everywhere, and he loves me. And he's reaching out to me. Not only is he reaching out to me through the scriptures and through the saintly persons and the deities and the holy name, he's reaching out to me through the light and the light bulbs. He's reaching out to me through my fire digestion. He's reaching out to me through the air. And he's actually surrounding me with love and goodness if I would just, you know, open my heart. Okay, so it's time for breakfast, and today is Ekadasi. For those of you who are visitors here, this is a special day twice a month. It's a fasting day, and some people fast entirely. But at least we fast from our staple foods, so our meals are a little odd today. They don't have any rice or wheat or beans, any of our staples there. They're a lighter, different kind of meal. Anyway, now breakfast is being served. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna.